We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses. There's so much information out there tailored towards service providers, so we've carved out a space just for you, the creative entrepreneur making and selling physical goods. We're firm believers that everyone has a story to share, and there is much that we can learn from each other's business journey. Whether you are just starting out or a seasoned business owner, this podcast will shed light on new strategies, inspiration, and action steps to help you grow your product-based business. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt and welcome to Proof to Product. This week, we're doing something special and bringing you two interviews with our Paper Camp alumni who run a manufacturing business while also having a brick and mortar shop. Today, Meg Sutton from Bell & Union joins me. You may remember Meg from episode 7 of Proof to Product. During that episode, she shared her startup story and how she does research and development for new products. But today, we are talking about her brick and mortar shop. We're talking about what led her to opening the shop, how she balances two businesses, and advice she gives to someone else looking to open up a retail space. So enjoy.
Hey, Meg, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Katie.
I should say welcome back to the show because you were previously on, and I'll have to pull up the episode number. I didn't do that beforehand, but we'll include it in the show notes for anyone that wants to go back and listen to your startup story and how you created Bell & Union and the motivation behind your products. But today, I really want to focus on your brick and mortar shop and how you have layered that into your existing business model.
So first, I've actually lived in three different cities during the course of Bell & Union. So when I launched the company, I was living in Savannah, Georgia. My husband was in the military, so he was stationed there, and I was in school. That's where we met and fell in love, and Bell & Union was born. So the company was actually only a year old. This was back in 2013 when he got out of the military, and we went to College Station, Texas. So if there are any Aggie fans listening, Gigamax. So we were there for the next 5 years, and definitely having a storefront at that point. First of all, I mean, I was really only a year old at that point, so not on the radar at all. And knowing that College Station was very temporary mm-hmm. for us. Anybody that knows College Station, or if you don't, it's literally a college town. That's pretty much all that's there. So not really the ideal environment for a cute little gift shop.
Okay.
Unless you're selling, like, I don't know, maroon t-shirts or something. So definitely not on the radar, but when he graduated, he got his dream job eating ice cream for a living.
Oh, lucky him.
Yeah, it's a real job, I promise. But that is in San Antonio, Texas. So we were looking at, you know, places to live and all of that. And we felt like if I was ever going to have a shop, it made sense with that transition from College Station to San Antonio. They're mm-hmm. about 3 hours apart. I'm not from San Antonio. He's not from San Antonio. So it was an entirely new city, blank canvas, which looking back was a little crazy because, I mean, how do you open a store when you don't know anyone in the community? They don't know your brand. I mean, you're literally starting as scratch as you possibly can.
Right.
But for me, I was like, oh, this will be great. I'll have, you know, the shop and studio, and the shop will make enough money to pay for the studio space so that wholesale can continue operating at no additional overhead.
Because right.
up until that point, my studio was literally the first floor of where we were living. It's basically a glorified garage. So really, we didn't have a ton of overhead because even as far as staff goes at that point, I just had a couple of part-timers to help package and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. So I went from basically zero overhead to a ridiculous amount of overhead.
Yeah.
But again, we felt like, well, at least if we have the retail space, it'll cover that cost. And literally my only goal was just pay the bills.
Right. Okay. So I want to push pause for a moment here because this is something I hear from a lot of our community members, a lot of our Paper Camp alumni, a lot of my coaching clients. People, you know, they think, oh, if I have the retail space, it will cover the cost and, you know, provide, it'll cover all overhead so I can continue to focus on my wholesale line, but then I'll also have the shop running, right? And I think one of the things people underestimate, and I'd love for you to weigh in on this because you've lived through it and been through it, it's essentially two business models. It's essentially having two separate businesses that need different marketing and have different customers and require different amounts of time. And I think people underestimate that. You're not playing shop with the retail side, especially if it's supposed to cover the overhead of you know, the rest of the business. So what was you, did you have that in your head too, that like, it'll be simple and easy peasy? Or did you kind of, did you know going into it how much hard work it would be?
I wish people could see me right now, cause I'm just sitting here nodding my head back and forth like, oh my gosh, yes. I was definitely that naive person. Maybe naive is not the right word, but I was optimistic about opening the store. I had done a lot of research. I talked to other people in our community that had open stores, all over the country, you know, in California, in New Orleans. So I was really kind of gathering all of this data. Like, okay, what is their average sales transaction? You know, how much money are they making per month? All of this stuff that would hopefully right. help me figure out, okay, is this realistic for us? I definitely had this mindset of, if I get the doors open, we'll be fine. Life doesn't work that way. That whole concept of if you build it, they will come only works apparently in baseball movies. So it was definitely, it's been a challenge. I think at the very least to say you hit the nail on the head. They are two completely separate businesses. And while yes, they can operate under the same roof and I can use the same staff to kind of double dip a little bit. So like our retail associates can help customers in the store, but if it's slow, they can be packaging for wholesale. That is great. But the truth of the matter is they are completely separate businesses. So it's a lot. I mean, anybody that's got a small business who's wholesaling their line, I mean, it is practically a 24/7 thing. I mean, you never shut it off in a lot of ways. And so to add another business like that, you've definitely got your work cut out for you and you've got your hands full. And it's just a totally different mindset. I had been so focused on wholesale for 6 years. That was really the world I knew. I didn't have a ton of background in retail. I'd worked a little bit in college at a boutique. So, I mean, I thought I had the gist of it, you know, but there's so much more just involved in the day-to-day and really just the expenses, things right. you can't, things you can plan for, and then other things you can't. So just some unexpected curveballs, which we definitely were thrown a few. So.
Yeah. I just off the top of my head, I'm thinking, okay, your marketing is going to be different because you're marketing to different audiences. Your sales cycles are going to be different because wholesale, you know, you're catering to retail shops that are going to be selling it, you know, seasonal products or, you know, their sales cycle's a little bit later than what your retail cycle would be. There's a lot of just different things that you need to consider within each business model in terms of how you're spending your time, what you're spending your money on, and what kind of effort and time you're putting towards it, I guess. What has been the most satisfying part of having your shop?
I think for me, just the ability to have that one-on-one with the customers is such a fresh new take on having a line. You know, before with wholesale, you're like this middleman. You don't really get to deal with the end user because you're dealing with the shops. And while you can prepare your shops as best as possible for how to display your work and how to sell it, you know, at the end of the day, it's up to the store to do that. Mm-hmm. And you really don't have that control. And you're also not getting that feedback from the end user a lot of times. So being able to have this little fishbowl at my disposal is kind of amazing and a little eye-opening too. So what's been funny to me is what I had struggled to sell on a wholesale level, I can sell the heck out of in my shop.
How fascinating.
It makes no sense whatsoever. But it's happened time and time again. Like our art prints, for example, we really never did that great with our letterpress printed art prints. They're okay, but you know, not a top seller for us by any means. I think it's one of our top selling categories in the shop.
How interesting.
So it's just very fascinating. Like I said, that whole totally different mindset. You mean you may go into it thinking, all right, this is going to be my top seller. We're going to be great. And then you might be surprised. So
yeah.
Got to keep you on your toes.
Totally. Do you ever use the retail shop to test products that you'd want to release on the wholesale side? Like, will you do a small run of something and put it in your shop to see if people like it before you go bigger on the wholesale side?
It's an interesting balance. So as most people know with wholesale, anything that gets manufactured, there are going to be minimums associated with getting stuff made that you're not doing yourself. Right. That can be anywhere from maybe 100 units to 250 units. With our line, you know, we do everything 100% American made. It's something we built the company on because apparently I like challenging myself. But
you have your core values in line. You know what you want to do.
For better or worse, I have those dang values. But usually for me, that means it's going to be a higher minimum. So typically on our products, we're looking at a 250 unit minimum. So it would be difficult to try it in the store.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Go to wholesale. So it just depends. We actually did a big release. Well, I say big. In March of 2019, I did a launch of Texas-specific art prints because, like I said, art prints had been doing really well for us in the shop, and people kept asking, I need Texas stuff, I need Texas stuff, which makes total sense because Texans are all about that state pride, which I get, I'm one. But it was funny because it was something I had never considered, obviously, from a wholesale perspective.
Right.
You're trying to design something that's going to work for the whole country, not one teeny city of it.
Yeah.
So again, shifting that mindset. So we did that launch in March and it's been great. And I've definitely been thinking about, okay, how do I translate that into something that would work for wholesale? But I'm also retraining myself a little bit into, you know, maybe it's something that only the shop has. So we did wood kitchen utensils for a few years because that kind of fit with like this foodie thing that we had developed, but we've run into some issues on the wholesale side as far as just being able to get the inventory. Pricing keeps going up. I mean, they're hand carved pieces, so I understand it, but it just became more and more difficult to wholesale.
Yeah.
So earlier this year, we made the decision, all right, we just got to cut it from the line. It's kind of becoming dead weight. But we actually just had our holiday planning meeting with our team this morning, and they're all kind of like, well, why can't we still have the utensils? So again, it's one of those simple things that I wouldn't have necessarily thought of because I was so focused on wholesale.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting balance.
I'm so glad you bring that up because that is something I work through with a lot of our clients too. If a product, if the margins don't work or it's not selling on the wholesale side, but they're still able to sell it well in their online shop or at craft shows, or if they have a brick and mortar, I think it's totally appropriate to keep something in the retail space, even if you're not selling it in the wholesale space. And I think that's another misconception. People think if I'm going to have this whole product line and we're going to do it all at the wholesale, we have to offer it all to retail too. And that's not the case. You can pick and choose what you sell to both sales channels.
Yeah, it's definitely something I'm still learning, you know, a little over a year in. Just again, retraining that brain. It's like, okay, am I focused on wholesale right now or am I focused on retail? And it helps having that outside team to be like, Meg, this is fine. We can totally do this. And so we'll still make the money we need to make as a store. So yeah, it's just a different mindset. Organization helps.
Yeah, for sure. So how do you balance your time between working on wholesale side of things and working in, you know, on planning and strategy for the brick and mortar?
A huge part of it is just my team. That was something I really didn't have. We had some part-timers, like I said, but now having the store, I knew from day one, before we even opened, I needed someone to balance me on the retail side. Like I said, I don't necessarily have that great retail background. And I was fortunate enough to have someone actually come to me saying, I've been in the corporate world for the last 20 years, but I want to work for small business. This is important to me. I love what you're doing. Yeah, she came to me with experience as a manager at Anthropologie and Restoration Hardware. Like, I'm basically the luckiest person ever.
Love it.
So, and I know that. She's my only full-time employee, but she's essentially the shop manager. So she handles anything personnel related to our team. So keeping track of the part-timers that we do have, reorders on inventory for the store, inventory for the store, you know, that retail focused position. So that way I can still kind of be in charge of the wholesale and the product development and that sort of thing. I'm still involved in the shop from a new order perspective, like the new products that we want to bring in. Not to say that she doesn't, you know, give suggestions and help with that, but I mean, that part's fun to me.
Right.
I would say it's collaborative as far as the visual merchandising. So I'm definitely still very involved in the shop. My desk like has a full view of the retail shop for better or worse some days. And there are specific days on my calendar that I am the shopkeep. You know, if she's not here, then I have to step into that role.
Right.
But having her is literally the definition of balance for me.
Yeah.
So we've got the one full-time and then right now we have three part-timers and they're pretty part-time, anywhere from, I would say, like 4 to 8 hours a week. So pretty minimal. but that also depends on the time of year too. So.
Of course. Yeah. I would assume you ramp up at, you know, the busier times like holiday or whatever. Okay. So one thing crossed my mind as I was listening to you talk, and you know, I'm sure I'm making some assumptions here, but you tell me if I'm correct. I am sure that you started Bell & Union because you are a creative person. You like to design, you like to make things, you like to create. And now you've been running this successful wholesale arm. You have a successful brick and mortar shop. That really pushes you into more of a managerial role, the, you know, operations, the marketing, all of the stuff that goes into running a business. How do you still carve time out for the creative, like get your juices flowing, like create new things when your day to day is somewhat consumed by managing a business?
I will be the first to admit I have not been the best about figuring out that balance with my time, to the point that I know our product line has suffered because of it. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that. Obviously, my time is stretched thin across what feels like multiple businesses. But also, I think I was in a creative rut, maybe because of that being stretched time-wise. But let's see. The last time I did a decent-sized product launch was January of this year, so 2019, which, you know, I had been on that kind of twice-a-year schedule as far as wholesale goes, coinciding with New York Now, because I had previously been doing both of those shows.
Right.
But I haven't done one since. So I'm a little behind. I think that's because on the personal side, there were a lot of transitions going on. I'm actually in the process of completely rebranding the business. You know, I started this company when I was 23 years old. I'm 31 now, so things are a little different. And my aesthetics changed, and the brand needs to grow up, I guess, the way that I have. So right now I'm looking at kind of a January 2020 big launch of just not your mama's Bell & Union anymore. Nice. Pretty much everything's going to be changing except the name. So that's kind of my guiding light right now. But carving out that time, it's definitely hard. And one of the things that I told Lo, who's my shop manager, and my mom reiterated, I think, in the interview process, is a big part of her job is actually protecting my time. So just having that expectation out from the beginning. In fact, it was even reiterated in the meeting this morning. It's like, even though I'm here, I may not be here, so to speak. So I need to be better about saying, okay, you know, Mondays and Wednesdays from 10 to 1, it's my creative time. But as any creative knows, you can't really force it. So
right, you can't really force it. And the reason I brought this up is I find, you know, we've talked about this in our alumni community and everywhere else. And I know everyone listening has probably experienced it. As you get more, as your business continues to grow, your time is now spent on a lot more of the administrative running the business. And we still need, but yet the business is based on the creative side of thing, the art that you're creating, the products you're creating. And so it is imperative to make space to have that creative time. But at the same time, like you said, you can't just be like, oh, every Tuesday from noon to two, I'm going to sit down and draw. You know, like who knows if you're going to, right? Who knows if you're
going to flip that switch?
Right. I mean, who knows that you'd be inspired at that time? So I guess my question falls to you, how are you still making time for that? And which you answered. But it is a struggle that most businesses face. And now that you're essentially running two businesses under the same brand name, it gets even harder. And so
I think having like managing expectations, giving people specific roles, like I said, she's in charge of personnel management. So I'm not having to deal with, you know, the HR kind of stuff or like training. Like we just hired a new person a couple weeks ago. Like I'm not really involved in the training at all. So she's handling anything. She writes the schedule. Like she, anything people managing, that is all on her. And I know for me personally, that is huge because I really had no interest in doing that whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's not one of my strengths. I'm not a great people manager. I can be a leader, but when it trickles down, like I kind of need somebody else to handle that. And so she does. And that's great. And that alone allows me that balance to focus on what I need to focus on. My mom is actually still a really significant part of the business and kind of has been from the beginning. We call her our kind of operations manager. So she handles like the finances day to day, you know, making sure the taxes get paid every month and like all that kind of stuff. And thank the Lord, because I am not a numbers girl. So just between the two of them, that alone, they're never allowed to leave, basically.
Well, I'm so glad you have a good support system because that does truly help, especially as you start to scale your business. You can't do it all. you shouldn't be doing it all. There's things we're not good at. There's things that drain us. There's things that just we shouldn't have our hands on, or we don't need to have our hands on. And so I'm proud of you. And I hope that doesn't sound condescending, but I know you personally, and I have seen the transitions over the years, and I'm proud of you for, you know, the growth you've had and how you've offloaded different things to different people and really kind of identified these roles that are going to help free you up to still be creative and still run the business the way you want it and make the changes you want to make, like this rebrand that's coming up. So, okay, what advice would you give to someone who is looking, you know, they were kind of in your shoes before you started this shop. Maybe they're looking for a space that can serve as a combo studio and retail shop, or maybe they're just thinking about starting a shop on their own. What do you wish you had known, and what do you want to pass on to them?
So I think a lot of the advice is kind of the same I would say to someone looking at wholesale. It just kind of is slightly different in terms of the how it works. Knowing your numbers, honestly, that's first and foremost, no matter what your business is, wholesale, retail, pantomiming on the sidewalk, I don't know, whatever. It's know your numbers.
Yes.
and that's not just, okay, what is the rent? But it's, what is the rent? What is the bills? What would my payroll look like? How many cards do I have to sell today just to pay, you know, whatever for each month? Like literally break it down as much as you can. Mm-hmm. Because when you start crunching those numbers, if you realize I have to sell 200 cards a day just to pay my rent, that's probably not going to work. Realistically. So just knowing your numbers is a big part of it. For retail specifically, location, location, location. You know, when we were looking at spaces around San Antonio, I mentioned I'm not from here. I didn't know north from south from whatever. So I had to spend my time kind of researching these different parts of the city. And San Antonio doesn't really have that kind of downtown core shopping. Like there's not like a main street where you would go and shop kind of thing. We've got the Alamo and Riverwalk. So, so just kind of learning where you would go shopping in the city. We settled on the area that we did because it was an established development. They tried to make it have that little main street feel, like there's cafe lights hanging between the buildings and that kind of thing. But it's not small businesses. You know, these are established companies. Kendra Scott is next door to me, which is a huge jewelry company that's worth like, I think, $2 billion right now, which side note, obviously, if you guys are listening to this, you're into podcasts, her How I Built This interview, absolutely incredible and inspiring. So sidebar.
We'll link it in the show notes, guys.
I know when I talked to the broker for the development, he let me know whether or not this is true, and I imagine that it is they, that particular store literally right next door to me is doing $500,000 a month in sales.
Wow.
That's huge. Yeah. And so I'm sitting here thinking, if I get even a tiny piece of that pie, I'll be fine, you know? And that was kind of the mindset that I had. You know, like I said, life throws you some curveballs. So things don't always work out the way that you anticipate them to. Within 1 month of us opening, 4 businesses in the development closed. Oh, including wow. A Starbucks. So that was, I mean, on a personal level, I was really upset about that, but you know, maybe my wallet's a little better off now, but that was hard. I'm like,
yeah,
sitting here mentally going, if Starbucks can't make it, how am I going to make it?
Right.
So to push through that was a lot. I mean, the development definitely took a hit with all those closures, because as a consumer, as a customer, why would you go somewhere that's got a bunch of empty spaces when you can go somewhere else and, you know, get more bang for your buck, so to speak. So, you know, it's been a lot trying to navigate through that.
You've also done a good job of diversifying your revenue within the shop. Like you've started doing workshops and bringing in like community events to kind of just engage with the community, right? How has that influenced sales and just your visibility within the local neighborhood?
Sure. So I think the biggest thing for us is we have learned if we can get them through the door, we're good. You know, when I was gathering all that data before we opened, most people told me you can expect your average sales transaction as a stationery store to be about $20. So all of the projections that I did, because yes, I sat down and did all those number crunching, you know, was based around this $20 model. We have been very fortunate in that our average sales transaction has actually been anywhere between $40 and $50.
That's great.
Which is more than double what I projected, which is incredible. The problem is we just don't have enough of them. But like I said, if we get them through the door, that's kind of that barrier. Literally, it's hysterical. If we have our door open, people will come in. It's like they physically don't want to open the door. It's the most bizarre thing.
How funny.
It's so hysterical. Cause like, I mean, the storefront has all this glass. So
right.
I can see it from my desk. So it's literally, I'm in this fishbowl just watching things. So it's been quite an education in the last year. But yeah, the workshops and events, it's just a way to get people through the door. Mm-hmm. You know, workshops, and I think most people that host them can tell you, generally speaking, you don't make a lot of money on those.
Right.
Most of that is going toward the instructor, the materials, you know, the shop. I think on average, we maybe get like $10 a student. So not a ton. But what we do is we offer 10% off on your purchases the day of your workshop to kind of encourage them, hey, you're already here, might as well shop and use your discount. And so that's definitely helped our sales. But again, it's just about getting people through that door, having them know that we're here. Because I mean, still a year later, we have people come in, oh, I didn't know you were here. So just trying to figure out, okay, how do we get to you?
Yeah, no, it's definitely a smart visibility play and just getting to know the community and, you know, helping to spread the word of mouth of people coming and enjoying your store too. But awesome. Well, what's next actually? What's going on? You mentioned the rebrand. What else do you have going on through the rest of the year?
That's really the big focus as far as like the wholesale side. Lowe's, my shop manager, is chomping at the bit to get the new stuff into the store as soon as it's made. And most of it's still in my head right now. But so that's really the big focus for me in the next couple months. I want to kind of have all that knocked out by November 1st. So that way I can kind of transition into more of a retail mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Cause that's really when holiday starts really ramping up. And I want to be able to focus on that. Plus wholesale generally is cooling off like once you get later in the year, because obviously they're focusing on their own shops at that point. So that's a big thing. I'm trying to figure out, do we go back to a trade show in January? Not sure yet how I feel on that. Or, you know, maybe our dollars are spent with some huge marketing thing. So we're still kind of talking through options as far as that goes with this big brand refresh and collection launch. Super down the road, ultimate dream. I want to buy my own building. Honestly, as hard as this last year has been in retail, I don't regret it. I love having the store, but I think if I can own the real estate, that's the way to go.
Yes.
Well, I mean, then at least you've got that investment to fall back on in theory.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But I love the community that we've built, and I want to be able to expand on that even more. Like if it's this massive warehouse or something, and we can have an artist collective where, you know, the local potter has her little space and like all this stuff, just to bring all these amazing people and artists together, because San Antonio doesn't really have that, unfortunately. So I think there's a need for that. So hopefully we'll see down the road if we end up there. For now, awesome. It's just hang on.
That's awesome. Well, it sounds really cool. I can't wait to hear what you do next with that space. Where can people visit you online or at your brick and mortar, and where can they follow you on social?
So on social, we're most active on Instagram because we are definitely visual people. Our handle is Bellin Union Co. Our website's bellinunion.com. We're on Facebook and Twitter, all the good stuff. If you're ever in San Antonio, our shop is kind of north of downtown in the Quarry.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Meg, for sharing your story and how you manage this and just the pros and cons and the joy that the shop has brought you. So thank you for that.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course.
When it comes to scaling a product-based business, one of the biggest mistakes I see people make is that they spread themselves too thin. They're trying to sell retail in their online shop. Maybe they're doing retail craft shows. Maybe they're dabbling in wholesale. They're picking up some custom jobs on the side. And maybe they're even trying out licensing. But when you do all of those different things, or even just a combination of them, you're spreading yourself too thin, because each of those requires different sales strategies, different marketing strategies, and you're catering to a different audience, a different customer. So the first thing I want to tell you to do is stop spreading yourself too thin. Instead, build systematically. Do one and get that going really well before you add in another sales channel. And two, if you are considering whether or not wholesale is a right next step for your business, I invite you to join me for my free masterclass, Is Wholesale Right for You? It's available at prooftoproduct.com/wholesale. It's available anytime you want to watch it. It's on demand in about 30 minutes. And I'm going to run you through some concrete things you need to have ready, or you need to think about before you wholesale, so that you can walk away knowing whether wholesale is the right next step for your business. So again, that's prooftoproduct.com/wholesale. Look forward to seeing you there.
Thanks so much for spending time with us today. Head on over to prooftoproduct.com to join the conversation, access our show notes, and discover free resources to help you build your product-based business. We'll be back next week with a new episode. Thanks again.